are recording the hearing. Just if I could ask everybody to please speak up a little bit as you're speaking and asking questions and answering, that'd be great. I'm opening the Board of Civil Authority meeting on August 18th at 4:03. Have all the BCA members that are in attendance have taken the oath by signing my sheet? Everybody signed it, right? Okay, good. Thank you. If everybody can state their names, meaning the board, for the record, that'd be great.
Charlie Patillo.
Peg Dillard.
Tom Yazwich.
Jackie Murphy.
Julie Grader. Okay, so the chair, Ruth Blawinkle, is not present, so we do need to make a motion to nominate a chair for these proceedings. I'd like to nominate Jackie Murphy. Is there a second? Second, Tom? Okay. Okay. Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Okay. So, if you want to go ahead, Jackie.
Okay. The first hearing is Coates Island, LLC. The parcel number is 61-001002, followed by 000000. Parcel owner of record, I think I already said. Parcel location, 474 Coates Island Road, Colchester, Vermont.
Well, that's our parcel location. It's 295 Coates Island Road.
Where is it? Did I print out the wrong one?
That's their mailing address. The address is up here.
Oh, I see.
Oh, you
punched
it.
Okay. Punched the hole through it. 295, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay, 295 Coates Island Road. And I am going to ask both appellant and assessor to state their names for the record.
Robert Hickory, Town of Colchester Assessor.
Aaron Hines, attorney for the appellant.
Glass Coates Hart.
Mike Keller.
David Coates.
Alan Coates Bailey.
Great. And now I'm going to ask you to take the following oath. Under the pains and penalties of perjury, do you solemnly swear that the evidence you give in the cause under consideration shall be the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And have you received a copy of the rules of procedure, and do you have any questions about how the hearing will proceed?
Okay.
Yes?
We did receive the rules.
Okay, thank you. Are there any conflicts of interest among the BCA members, or have there been any ex parte communications?
No.
Okay, so Bob, can you briefly introduce the property on appeal by describing the property and its present valuation?
Yep. So the property is located at 295 Coates Island Road. It was valued at $6,946,300. He was appealed to the Board of Listers. The board valued to $5,096,300. The property is 68 acres. Roughly 5,650 feet of. There is a single family home on the property. Uh, 65 slip boat marina and 37 leased sites for camps on the property.
I'll now ask the appellant to present their valuation and supporting evidence, and you have 10 minutes to do this.
Yes.
Again, I'm Erin Hines from Lane Roxbury, and will on behalf of the appellants. The appellants, the taxpayer, appealed this valuation because the initial valuation, the $6,946,300, was a 186% increase over the prior year's valuation, and their total tax bill by their calculation increased by 63%. And we provided you a spreadsheet of those increases so that the board could see them numerically. The taxpayers dispute that the assessed value, both that $6.9 million initial value from earlier this year and the one that we heard about today, the $5,096,300, are not the appropriate fair market value of the property. And in order to support their appeal, the taxpayers had an appraisal report done by Mr. Keller, which we've supplied to all of you. The property that's the subject of the report is the leased sites. It does not include the farmhouse and it does not include the marina. The taxpayers were okay with the valuation that the town put on those pieces of the property. The taxpayers' appraisal showed that the fair market value of the property based on an income capitalization approach is $2,365,000 as of April 1, 2026.
Can you say that again?
Sure. So the value based on the income capitalization approach is $2,365,000 as of April 1, 2026. And Mr. Keller's report that you all have walks through his analysis, but essentially what the income capitalization approach does is look at an estimation of the gross income for the property based on actual 2026 base rent for each of those leased sites. Looks at the actual historical expenses for the property based on the taxpayers' historical expense reports, and then applies a rate of capitalization to the net income. So in this case, the gross incomes based on the actual rents was $256,272 plus a tax escalation. The expenses were $57,675,000. So the net income was $198,597, which was then divided by the overall capitalization rate of 8.4%, which got us to the fair market value of $2,365,000. If any of you have questions about how the capitalization rate is chosen, Mr. Keller can probably address that better than I can, and it is in his report as well. But that's the summary of how the taxpayers have used the income capitalization approach to reach their fair market value. You can't use a sales comparison approach for this property because there just aren't comparable sales to use. And Mr. Keller's report talks about why he did not use that as well. I think the big difference between where the town is at and its appraised and its assessed value versus the appraisal is that the town adds a very high value of acreage on top of the value of the leased sites. And we don't think that is appropriate, and Mr. Keller can explain why further, but when you're doing an income capitalization approach, you look at what the property can earn based on the historical income. There's no surplusage or excess land that has value other than the rents to the taxpayers. So that's why you don't add those up separately as you might in a typical residential appraisal. Did you want to add something to that?
There are three areas that they valued land or rights to land. They assessed the campers total $14,500,000 for their right to the land. They assess the owners of the property another roughly $100,000. I guess they've reduced it now from last time, but it was $100,000 per site. And then they turned, which is about $3.9 million, and then they still have another $2.7 million for land. Now, if you look at it, this property is fully developed. I don't care who you are, where you were, and how much money you get. You're not going to do anything to this additional development on this land because it already doesn't. The whole water with the current zoning regulations. So this land is not excess land, it's not surplus land, it's just land that supports the current uses, marina, farmhouse, and 39 rented sites. We're doing more than he has. I think Bob's not counting the two owners' parcels. That's part of the difference. But anyways, we had no idea why the $2.6 or whatever million dollars it is for for unidentified land, and what can you do with it? If you can't do anything with it, what's the value? You've already valued everything. That's our bitch.
Bob, did you have any response before we ask questions?
Sure. The lease sites are just part of the property. You're talking 68 acres. We have ...37 lease sites on 68 acres. There's a lot of excess land, and the way we value it is you have a value for the site, but there's also the land as well. So we're separating the values out. We could just value the sites, but then you still have 30-something acres left over with an X number of frontage left over as well. It's quite a big piece of land with only 37 sites on it. I'm not an engineer. I don't expect to be one. The things you could do to that property, I don't know. Historically, in the town of Colchester, properties that have transferred that are leased sites or leased land on the lake have been converted to condominiums. We have two examples in the last 15 years of that happening. And then those lots are sold as if they were condominium properties. Mungian property had five camps, I believe, on it. So for $200,000, the property owner who purchased it, Orman, turned around and sold those lots to non-family members for $120,000 a piece. Kept one for himself, built a house on it, and resold it recently. The Bruce Mungian property, which I believe had 28 units on it, houses, those people were evicted. Now those has been condominiumized and those are being sold off currently. So historically that's what's happening. These are 5-year leases, which means that the property owners who own the camps are limited to who they can sell to. It's very difficult to get a loan on a 5-year lease. It's hard enough to get one on a 20-year lease, which the rest of the town has on the other leased camps. So there's a lot of control, and there's a lot of control in the 5-year leases. In theory, in 5 years, you could have everybody removed from the property and take over those sites. And that's a lot of control, and there's value to that. And just doing an income approach on what they're asking for rent is not really capturing the full value of the property.
Anybody have any questions for either group?
I do.
Oh, I'm asking the PCA first.
Is that excess?
Hang tight, Mike.
I was going to ask, is that excess acres not developable? Is it wetland? Is it?
Well, first of all,
I know historically nothing's been on it, but I'm saying in the future, if somebody wants to build on there,
you get 68 acres, and you've got camps over most of it, okay? And then you got a road that doesn't meet anything. Nothing about the property meets the current zoning. Nothing. Sewage disposal, the road itself, there was nothing that makes sense. It's just been there for 150 years or something. That's why it's there. You can't stop it now. But you can't do it. Bob wants to do is change the highest and best use of the property. It's just, you can't do that. I mean, that's, these people, all these campers have got invested, get money invested in these things. You try to, there's Shawat, Hockey, and Coates are the three big guys. And they have a tradition. They've been consistently taking care of their people. And he wants to drop everything, erase everything, and do something new. I don't think so. And if you think you can get that many units, you're crazy. Now you're going to meet current town standards if you can legally get rid of the campers without having to get them in the lawsuits and then try to do something with it. You have to meet all the current standards. Good luck. So that's just a whim on his part.
I have a question. So in the total value that we're discussing today, where does the marina sit and where does the farmhouse sit? And what is the value of each one of those? How much do I take off that $5,096,000?
The farmhouse is assessed, the replacement cost and less depreciation is $383,200. The marina is assessed at $252,800. And there's a shed for $1,300, a barn for $38,000, and then a small patio for $1,400.
So the marina sits in the outbuilding amenity?
Yes.
Category? Okay.
So could I ask about the comparison to the Mungin properties? Do you feel that that's not a valid comparison? The comparison to the Mungin properties where people with a 100-year lease were evicted?
Well, do you know the story about Mungin's
property? Oh, yes, I do. Yeah.
How they had an association, and they sued their association. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Okay, that's... And they refused to pay, and it just, the whole thing buckled under. That's not the case here. I get involved in that, so I know a little bit about it. Mm-hmm. It's totally different.
Well, with the Mungin property, they were able to do condominiums and all that, but they also were right on the main drag, or off the main drag over there, where they might have actually services that they get from the town as well. We don't have any of that on the island. We don't see anything coming.
What kind of services do you get from the town?
I guess fire and ambulance.
But do you get water?
No.
You have well. Is that what you have as
no.
well, water?
No, most of us get it.
Lake water.
Lake water, okay.
And septic systems. Yeah, and there's no snow plowing, there's no education because there's no children that go to school. And that's all fine with us. But there is a difference between what Mungin was doing and what we would ever do, because we would never do that.
Their access is just, it's a one-way road. There used to be a rule in Colchester, if you had over a certain amount of units, you had 2 points of access for fire. One lane road, that's what they got.
Nobody lives there for convenience.
Anybody else have any questions?
I'm a little, I don't know who to put this to, but this question of or the disparity between, is it developable into something and therefore has a lot of extra value, or it's just not developable, is kind of the important question. I mean, it's not only, Bob might say it's got tons of potential, and then you're kind of saying, well, that's really not true, between zoning, services deliverable, the town's investment that would have to probably occur to get services there to even make it.
You can't.
Yeah. Dying property based on some idea that it doesn't, that's not the job.
I think, Mike, the question is, what's the highest and best use? Is the highest and best use to condominiumize it? Because legally, you can condominiumize it pretty easily.
You know what?
You can condominiumize it fairly easily just by submitting documents to the town clerk. And so by doing that, you then sell each individual lot off and still have a remainder of property left over. But I'm just saying, that's a potential, and that happens. And that is can be easily done. And it's just, that could be the highest and best use.
Well, you're assuming that
I'm not assuming anything.
That's a change in use. That's a legal change in use.
Because they're leased camps.
You're changing it from ownership with a lease to condominiums. That's a change in use. I looked at that for property in South Herald, and the town said, no way.
Yeah.
So have you checked the town here to see if they're looking?
No, I know it's been done, though. and done twice.
The fact that it could hypothetically be done doesn't mean it's the highest, best use of this particular property. I think that's the question.
Well, you have to look at what's legally permissible, and you have to look at what's going to yield the highest value to the property. So when you look at the highest and best use, the highest value may not be leasing at a very low rate. And when you appraise a property, you don't use their actual asking rates. You use the market rates.
One of the four things is, we agree with you, highest and best use. We agree, but it has to be legal.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we have no idea whether it's legal to do what you want to do.
I'm saying it is.
And then we have no idea what the campers would do.
It has been done in a situation where there's no water and sewer and all of those services. I don't think you have an example of that. So you're assuming that that could all be done here, which it seems highly unlikely could be done. And as I understand it, the existing excess acreage, and tell me if I'm wrong, supports the leased units. It's not like the extra acres around the farmhouse could be sold and developed into something else. Now it can't.
No.
It's just they're supporting the lease.
I think you also have to think about, you own a piece of property and you lease it to camps. You can choose what you lease that camp to. You can choose if you're going to lease it under market value or over the market rents. If you do under market rents and you appraise it based on the leases, you're going to be undervaluing that property. If you're leasing it under market rents, then you have to add in what the other value is for the property.
Oh, we're not under market.
How do you know?
We're right between Hockey and Thompson's Point.
There's three of them. We're above Shalott, and that's town.
And how long are the Shalott leases for?
Pardon?
How long are the Shalott leases for?
20 years.
Yeah, and Hockey's is 20 years as well.
Right.
So is the problem the length of our leases?
That's part of it, yeah.
Okay.
I think the part of the lease, having a short lease, you have more control as a property owner.
Yeah.
You have a lot more control. Within 5 years, you can turn over, you can basically not renew all the leases within 5 years.
But you have a tradition of what you're doing.
I understand that. But that's the owner's choice. The owner's choice is making that tradition, not the market. And if you ask a developer what they would pay for the property, that's what you need to be looking at, not what you're asking.
We've reached our time limit, unfortunately.
Does any BC have any final questions?
No.
Okay.
So we will appoint an inspection committee of three BCA members. The inspection committee will be in contact with you to inspect the property within the next 2 weeks. The inspection committee is to verify property in regards to testimony heard today, along with the assessor's property record card information. And we will recess to a date and time not more than 30 days from the hearing to accept the inspection committee report.
Who is the best person to contact as far as? Yes, I do have that, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You got my information?
Yes, I do. Okay. Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
All these are good.
I'm here already.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Exactly.